Hello, everybody. This is Mark Little, and welcome to the Advisor Pack Monthly Session. This is the session each month where we get together, and well, technically, we're coaching. I mean, this is your opportunity for live coaching. If you'll examine your Zoom webinar panel, there is a spot on there for you to. There is a spot on there for you to be able to ask your questions live. Sorry, I had a little technical problem here. And, you know, and that's your greatest opportunity. I'm going to go through, as I do each month, our team responds to questions as they come in from program members, and we try to keep up with those as they come in. And each month I go through the selection of questions that have come in from advisors in the program, and I try to handpick the questions I think, you know, are the highest level questions that could be the greatest benefit to the largest number of advisors. In this case, we had several questions come in just before the webinar this month, and so I thought they were good questions, so I chose a handful of them to deal with today. But my point is that the primary sign that you're implementing in this program is that you've got a lot of questions. We've learned over the years that we know advisors that are implementing seriously, that are getting the greatest results because, you know, they submit questions constantly as they're implementing our methods. You know, when a plan hits the real world, it encounters all kinds of obstacles and roadblocks and questions and unique situations. And of course, people are different, so clients react differently to these methods. And so we know the advisors that are implementing seriously because we get several questions per day from some advisors because they're implementing so actively. So this is your opportunity. In this program, we give you an opportunity once each month to get live coaching. So if you'll examine your Zoom webinar panel, there is an opportunity to submit questions live today. So as I go through the content, if you've got questions, if you're implementing something in the program and you want to ask your question, something that you've encountered that's a little bit different or that you're struggling with, or any kind of obstacle or anything you need support or you're stuck on, now's your opportunity to get some support. We always recommend that you come prepared. I mean, the best, let me tell you what I always did when I was in Bill Bachrach's program or any other program like this, as I was actively accepting new clients, whenever I had an opportunity to be with my coach, I would block an hour prior to any of these sessions. And I would just get my notes together and my thoughts together and say, look, if I could just ask one question, what would it be? I was always prepared to pounce on my coaches with, whatever I was struggling with at the moment. So I recommend you do the same. I mean, if the day before these webinars, you blocked time to sit down and really think about what is it that you're struggling with? What is it that you need the most help with? What would help you accelerate your results right now? What is the one thing that if you could address it would really knock away the greatest obstacle in front of you right now and lay a pathway for faster implementation? Those are the kinds of things that if you come prepared at this session, you have an opportunity for feedback from someone who's actually done it. So, but in the meantime, I'm just going to go through and I'm going to cover questions that have been submitted that I thought were really good questions, things that I struggled with myself when I was implementing, and things that I know because I coach advisors every day. I'm going to cover some issues that I know are big issues for every advisor. So, just to kind of give you an overview of the program, I do this every month, but just a reminder, this whole program is about your advisor pact. Your pact, your pledge to every ideal client. And pact is an acronym. So what is your pledge to every ideal client? It's the four client expectations. These are the four things that in our research since 2002 these are the things in researching, you know, affluent clients. These are the four things they say that they cannot, but research tells us that affluent clients claim that they struggle with finding in an advisor anywhere at any price. So PACT is an acronym for the four things that clients expect the most, but have the hardest time finding in an advisor. It's protection, an advisor who will actually protect the client from themselves, protect their financial assets, protect their financial strategy from any assault from the outside or from within. Anything that's becomes an obstacle, or whenever the client gets on track, your pledge is to be the protector of their strategy. You're going to make sure that they're always on track, and you will protect them. If anything ever gets them off track, you're going to be standing right at the ready to get them back on track. Paying attention, you're going to meet with your clients regularly enough that that you're going to be pledging that you're going to be the, of all the advisors in the client's life, you're the one that's paying close attention to know whether the client is actually on track or drifts off track. So if a client drifts off track, you're the one that's saying, you're pledging to pay close enough attention to know when they drift off track and to be standing at the ready with the recommendation to get them right back on track and to coordinate. So coordination is the idea of being the individual in your client's life that coordinates all the people, the financial people in the client's life, and coordinates all the financial pieces and parts, the financial assets in the client's life, to make sure that they're perfectly aligned with the overarching plan. And transparency, that you're going to be, of all the financial advisors in your client's life, you're going to be the one that steps forward and says, I'm going to make sure that you understand what you're paying for every financial product that you own and what you're paying to every financial person in your life. I can't tell you in our research how many affluent people really had no idea how certain financial people in their life were being paid. For example, their life insurance agent. We'd say, so how are you, how is that person being paid? And they go, you know, I don't really know. I know I have some insurance products. Somehow, some way they're being compensated through those, but I have no idea how they're being compensated or what they're being compensated. So you're the person that pledges to step up and solve all those little transparency problems. You're going to make sure that for every financial person, every financial product in their life, you'll make sure that the client knows crystal clear what they're paying. Okay, so by resolving these four client expectations, you are aligning yourself with the four things that clients claim that they can't find anywhere, and therefore you're doing the one thing that most financial advisors do not do, and that is distinguishing yourself from the pack. Most financial advisors are indistinguishable from other financial advisors, and the advisor pact pledge separates you from the pact. Very clearly from the pack. I just want to follow up on last month. I talked about this webinar that we have launched to help you accelerate your results in this program. And if you have not taken this webinar, I strongly encourage you to do that immediately. As soon as we get off of this session today, I recommend that you register for this webinar and schedule a time to take it either today or sometime in the next couple of weeks. Sometime before the next webinar, I recommend that you register for this webinar, which is going to basically go through this program and explain what the value of the program is and what you should be doing in order to get the best results. And at the end of this webinar, I'm going through five specific things that you can do to get the greatest value from this program. So right now, if you'll look in at the Zoom webinar panel, for this webinar right now, right here, right now. If you'll look for the chat window, I have just passed you a link to register for this webinar. You can register anytime. I recommend that you save this link and register alternately, and I've put it back up on my screen. If you'll look at my screen again, register at, I've created a URL called advisorpactpledge.com. If you lose this link that I'm giving you right now, you can always go to advisorpactpledge.com and register for this webinar. The feedback that we've got from this webinar is outstanding from members of this program that are saying, hey, you know, I've been a member of the program for a while, but, you know, it wasn't until I took this webinar that I really understood is specifically what that I needed to do to get the best results as the fastest. And so, so block an hour. It's an hour and 4 minutes for, I believe, for this webinar. Block an hour and 4 minutes to register for this and take the webinar and set yourself up for success with this program. Okay, let's get right to the question. So the first question that I, and by the way, as I said before, as I go through the questions today, if you have any thoughts or if you have questions about the content that I'm covering today, just enter your questions and I'll keep an eye on the question box. And when I get to a breaking point, I'll address your questions. But to pick the first question that came through for this session, the question was, I was wondering if your business card says anything such as financial consultant or financial advisor. Mine says financial consultant, but my guess is that yours does not. I was thinking of changing it to comprehensive financial strategist or truly comprehensive financial strategist, something like that. I think you're going to be surprised at the answer to this. When I stopped accepting clients in 2002, but prior to that, to get to the answer to this question, what does my business card look like? It goes back to 1999. It occurred to me that I wanted to distinguish myself from other advisors. So I created two business cards, one for clients and one for non-clients for use during client acquisition activities. So my business card that I use for client acquisition, which I'll cover both business cards, but it literally was just my name, no title. And the one that I use for client acquisition does not have my company name, just my name. So I'd give my name, my address, my phone number, my email address. I coordinated with my compliance department at the time back in 1999. And I said, hey, if I wanted to have two business cards, one for business, one for clients and one for non-clients or one for personal, what could be on my personal business card? Because I knew on my my business card, the one for business, it had to have securities through whatever, you know, and all that compliance stuff had to be at the bottom. So that was my business card. And so I said, but if I have just a personal card, like if I'm just, you know, having a personal card for giving a card to someone that's not a client and I'm not talking business necessarily with them, what can a personal card look like? And this was what was approved. And I've kept it all these years ever since. So it's just Mark Little with my contact information. So what's the difference between this card and my business card? The only difference was I added my company name. I did not ever put a title like trusted advisor or financial advisor or any of those things you're saying. On my business card, I just had my company name, but of course I had to put all that compliance stuff at the bottom as well. So I didn't like that. So I almost never used my business card. I just used my personal card, this card right here, 99% of the time. Now, in this program, as you know, this program is focused on client service. So we don't talk about client acquisition much. It's not the purpose of this program. The purpose of this program is once you've acquired a client, what specifically do you need to do in order to exceed that client's expectations? And so we don't talk about client acquisition much, but I'll make a departure just here for a minute and tell you that when I was doing lead generation, trying to identify leads to potential clients, what, you know, how did I position myself? Because that's kind of really what you're getting at here. You know, what did you call yourself, or how did you hold yourself out to the public as, you know, a financial consultant or whatever? And I didn't do any of that. If I had a niche, and this is what I recommend to any advisor today, because as I talk to advisors about how they acquire clients, it's really messed up. It's really there is not, in my opinion, a good material out there in our industry explaining to advisors how to acquire, how to do lead generation, and how to do lead conversion. In other words, lead generation is, you know, is the skill of being able to go out and find leads to business, find people who are potential. Lead generation is finding potential clients who want to sit down and talk business with you. That's my definition of lead generation. Lead generation is your ability to go out and find tons of people, potential clients, who are willing and want to sit down and schedule time to talk to you about business, about doing business. And so that's lead generation. And so what I position myself as in that whole lead generation process is not even as a financial advisor, although I did call myself a financial advisor, still do, when somebody asked me. But the point is, you know, what how did I position myself so that somebody would want to sit down and talk business? Well, the way I positioned myself, and I recommend advisors do this to this day, is I was specializing in, I was the advisor in town that you went to, and if you, whenever someone had a significant financial issue on the front burner, so you've got a financial, an unusual or significant financial situation, a financial issue that's in front of you that you're thinking about, and you and it occurs to you that you'd like to sit down and, you know, work through it with someone. And so there's things in life. So what's a financial situation? Well, as I was out there in the world generating leads, I was looking for people who had financial situations on the positive side and on the not so positive side, on the negative side. So on the positive side, you know, these are people that are buying a business, people who are selling a business, people who are getting an inheritance, people who have come into money, people who are buying a house, a gigantic house. You know, wow, we're making a significant upgrade to from a house that we've lived in for years. Now we're moving into a mansion, and we're just kind of, you know, this is a big financial investment. Anybody that's making a significant major purchase, I would sit down with people that are, you know, deciding whether to take a retirement offer, you know, that's been offered to them by their company. Those are on the positive side. Then on the negative side, you had people that are going through some sort of a financial crisis. They've been given their walking papers by their company, or they're going through a divorce, or they've just lost a spouse, or they've, you know, some of these things that are brutal life situations that at the end of the day, they have significant financial impacts. So I let the word get around that if you are in a situation where you're having to deal with a financial issue, then I'm the individual of all the financial advisors in town, I'm the person that you schedule an hour with to sit down and get your thoughts together. That in 1 hour, I will sit down and help you get your thoughts in order so that you can attack a significant financial issue with a lot better clarity and a lot better organization. You'll walk out of my office with a greater sense of clarity than you've ever had about your own financial situation, and you'll feel prepared in a way that you never could with another advisor to deal with whatever the issue is, buying a business, selling a business, you know, getting a divorce, whatever it is. And so that was my niche, if you want to call it a niche. And so what I would do is I would hand this business card with just my name and my contact information. Then I would flip it over, and on the back it's blank, and I would just write the financial issue, specialist in people buying a business or whatever their front burner financial issue was. I would handwrite that on the back to jog their memory about where I fit potentially in their life. You know, if this is a big enough financial issue that's significant enough for you that you want to get better clarity for yourself, then, I can give that to you in 1 hour's time. And, I'm the guy you go to when you have a significant financial issue to deal with. That was my niche. And so I wanted to promote my name more than anything else. I didn't want to go out on a limb and hope that people would remember my business name or my title or any of that kind of thing. I realized my biggest problem in my community was most people didn't know my name. They had no idea who I was. And so I just printed business cards with my name on it because I didn't want to appear salesy. I didn't want to have securities through blah, blah, blah. And then thinking, oh yeah, I'm going to book an hour with this guy and he's just going to push securities on me or whatever. And so it was just Mark Little. And then on the back, I specialize in people, making major purchases and, getting a sense of clarity on that. I would just write on the back what it is. So that's it. And then for my clients, I would have the same business card, but with my company name on it and then all the compliance stuff on there. But the only difference is for the clients on the back, I would list my team. So I would put tax subject matter expert and then a little bunch of dots, and it would have the name of my tax subject matter expert and their phone number and their email address. And then, financial planning subject matter expert, estate planning subject matter expert, insurance subject matter expert. So I would have all my subject matter experts on the back of my card and then their phone number, their direct line, and their email address so that every client had my contact as the big, primary, I'm your most trusted advisor, although I didn't have my title on there. But on the back, I wanted every client to have quick access to their team, basically, so that if something came up, they could contact the team. Now, this opens tons of cans of worms. One of the most common questions we get is, do we encourage clients to contact team members directly? I must admit, I was in control of those phone numbers and those email addresses. So, I had an email address for my tax subject matter expert. So it was tax@myfirmname.com. And so if I fired one tax subject matter expert and hired another one, I would reissue that same email address to the new subject matter expert. And the phone number, likewise, it was, a business phone system to where I could issue a phone number and it would forward to, the subject matter expert's line, typically their business phone number. And so the number the client was calling was not the subject matter expert's actual phone number. It was a phone number issued by me. So it would go through my system and forward to them. So it would pick up and it would say, XYZ accounting firm, and of course they would have the name of my tax subject matter expert right there on my card, and they would ask for them, but by name. And more cans of worms. So I would make it a standard in our business that all the administrative support people for our subject matter experts had to memorize the list of our ideal clients so that if they did contact the office of one of our subject matter experts, that they wouldn't say, I'm sorry, who is this? And what's this regarding? No. If one of our ideal clients called that phone number to the tax subject matter expert, it would be my phone number. It would ring through to their office. But when they mentioned their name, the person answering the phone presumably would recognize the name and say, oh, yes, Ted Smith. Yes, Mr. Smith. Just hold, please. Let me put you through to that office. Just hold a minute, please. So anyway, the point is client business cards were different than client acquisition business cards. and they would have the team names and numbers and addresses on the back, email addresses and so forth. But that's how I did it. The only other thing that would distinguish my card, business card, from others, and it's a good question because I've never been asked this question before, even over on the Trusted Advisor Toolkit. In all these years, since 2008, nobody's asked me about my business card. So good on you. The one thing I have always done differently is I have always printed my business cards on heavier stock, so thicker paper, so you feel my card and you'll instantly feel that it's different. And I've always had my cards printed by Crane the old-fashioned way. It's called engraved printing. It's the way that printing was done back in the 1800s. So this is like old school, traditional, real for real printing like they did it in the 19th century. When you run your finger across the print on an engraved card, it's raised lettering, but it's not raised like this cheap stuff that most people do if they have raised lettering on their business cards. That's done through some printing process using plastic beads that are heated. No, this is actual engraving. It's a form of printing that's really gone out of fashion. The company I use is called Crane. It's crane.com. Just look for engraved business cards by Crane. But as you can see, I don't know if you can read this, but 50 cards are $174. They're $3.48 each card. So it's quite expensive, but I've always felt it was worth it. It will certainly distinguish you. Anybody that gets your business card, if it's an engraved card, they will not forget it. Or put it aside because it'll be instantly recognizable, especially to affluent people that are used to nice things. They'll feel a business card like I've always felt that they feel a business card like this, and they instantly spot the quality, either consciously or subconsciously. And I can't tell you on my simple card. I mean, as simple as this is, I can't tell you how many people felt when I handed my card, they would say, "Wow, this is an impressive card," and I'm like, I always look at it and I go, it's just got my name on it. It's what's impressive about this? There's literally nothing impressive about it other than the feel. There's something about it. There's something about it that is substantial. There's something about it that's high end. And it's just Bill Bachrach used to talk about the workmanship being, how affluent people can spot quality. And when they work with you as an advisor, if you set your standards high and you establish, deliverables that are consistent and high end, that will be appreciated and recognized by, your ideal client community because it's so unusual. And he always used the example of automobiles, that if you open and close a door of a domestic car, like a Chevy or a Ford or something like that, it may be solid and it may be really nice, but then go open and close the door of a Bentley sometime. Just if you're near a dealership of a Bentley or a Lamborghini or Ferrari or something like that, just go open and close the door. You'll be able to instantly feel the difference between like a regular car and, a $500,000 car. It's the way the workmanship is instantly recognizable. And the same goes for this kind of a business card. So you don't have to, but I think the content on the card is more important, but I just thought I would mention it because it is different the way that I've always done this. Okay, next question. You mentioned coordination or overarching strategy. Can you please give some examples or definition as to what this means? May seem pretty self-explanatory, but I'd like to hear how would you define these terms or how would you explain what this means if you had to further flesh it out for a client? I find that most people do not have an overarching strategy or things coordinated, so it might be helpful if we could provide them with an example, so on and so forth. Okay. Okay. Let me go through this. So the first thing to recognize is that coordinate. Okay, so you're asking about the terms coordination and overarching strategy. When I read your question, the first thing that popped into my mind was to make this point that these are two completely different concepts. Now, I know you know that, but I want you to think about that. because your ability to articulate these concepts in a coherent way, and I would say as much for your team as for clients. I don't feel like this comes up that much with clients, although it can for sure. But as much for your team, your members of your team, your ability to coherently articulate these two concepts, coordination and overarching strategy, become very, very important. And it's important that you realize they're two different things. So let me just kind of go over it. What you're looking at here is the advisor-packed financial services model. So rather than the client dealing directly with each of these subject matter experts, basically what you're doing is you're inserting yourself in the middle as the most trusted advisor between the client and all these subject matter experts, and you're saying, look, I'm going to create this overarching strategy, and this overarching strategy is nothing more than the plan that I'm going to put together, and it's designed to align and focus your team, meaning the client's team. So the overarching strategy is a plan that's put together in order to achieve the client's goals. So that's the overarching strategy. It's what most financial advisors call a financial plan, but except for the fact that financial plan has no real industry accepted definition, and it's confusing to clients. And I made this point last month, so I would actually recommend that you go back and listen to last month's session again, because we talk about this at length about the strategy. But the point is that we don't use the term financial plan. We use overarching strategy. You're inserting yourself between the client and the team and saying, look, I'm your single simple point of contact, and I'm going to make sure there is an overarching strategy. Now, coordination is a different concept. It is the ongoing activity of pulling together all of the separate elements of your client's financial affairs, all right, and coordinating them. Okay, so let's talk about it a little bit more. Coordination, in part, is getting all these team members to talk to each other. So, you know, the question becomes, before you came along and made your advisor-packed pledge to this client, how often did the tax expert talk to the insurance expert, especially when there are overlapping issues? How often did the financial planner talk to the money manager? When did the money manager ever talk to the estate planning subject matter expert? Did they ever interact? Do they even know who each other are? You're going to enforce this form of coordination. You're going to make sure that, especially when there are overlapping issues and there are constantly overlapping issues. I would say with my clients, nearly every issue has some overlap between two or more subject matter experts. So the coordination is to make sure that they are communicating with each other about everything, you know, that there is a coordination between these team members. And we talk about the financial products in a client's life. So the client has financial products and services that they own, you know, stocks and bonds and mutual funds and, you know, turnkey asset management products and different things. They own various financial products and services. So how well are these things coordinated? So if the insurance expert is recommending a financial product or a service, and then the money manager is recommending a financial product or a service, and then the financial planner is recommending a specific financial product or a service, who's coordinating those things to make sure that they're perfectly aligned with the overarching strategy? So coordination is the ongoing activity of pulling them together. So coordination is coordinating people and things. That's coordinating the others on your team. That's coordinating the others your client has on their team already, such as the accountant that they've been working with for 20 years, or their auto insurance agent that they've had for years, or whatever. So you're coordinating not only your team, but you're making sure that you're coordinating the others that the client, the other financial people in your client's life. And you're coordinating your client's financial assets. These are all the pieces and parts of their financial affairs, what I'm calling financial products and services. You're going to coordinate all of these things. And looking, that's in the here and now. That's the client's, you know, current financial situation. That's what you'll be coordinating. But looking forward down the line, you're also going to be coordinating all your clients' future recommendations. So as situations arise in your client's life, financial situations, or as you're looking at your client's goals and trying to put together an intelligent, smart plan to accomplish your client's financial objectives, you're going to coordinate all the recommendations between all these team members. And you're going to make sure that whenever issues overlap, they're talking to each other so that everything's well coordinated. So coordination is the act of coordinating people and things. And then the overarching strategy is the plan, otherwise known as the financial plan. Okay. So let's talk about the financial plan, what we call the overarching strategy. That's the plan. We call that in our world here in the Advisor Pack Monthly program, since financial plan is an overused term that literally means nothing. It has no standards in the industry, and it's confusing because what you think of as a financial plan and what the client thinks of as a financial plan are often two different, entirely different things. So we disrupt the human brain pattern, and we don't call it a financial plan. So in our vernacular within this program, we call it the comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy. So you say that to a client, say, I'm going to make sure that you have a comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy. And they're going to go, okay, well, that's a mouthful, but it's designed specifically to disrupt the brain pattern so that you're not saying financial plan, but every word in that phrase needs to be there. Like, it needs to be comprehensive. It needs to be written. It needs to encompass their entire lifetime. It needs to be financial. Like, it's not, we're not talking about a plan, to get their, we're not talking about a plan for them to move forward in their career. We're talking about a plan for their financial assets. And then strategy is what we're talking about. Strategy in terms of an overarching strategy to make sure it all happens, that there's a strategy to accomplish something, in this case, the client's objectives. So all those words need to be there, comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy. That's why we use that phrase in our program instead of financial plan, but it's a mouthful, so otherwise known as overarching strategy. Okay, so and so we use that term in lieu of financial plan. And so what is it? Well, that's what we covered last month. So since in our system, all five subject matter experts are involved in this activity of creating this comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy, then, it's basically, this is what I covered last month, so I'm not going to cover it now, but it's really five plans. It's to require each of your subject matter experts, tax, estate, money management, insurance, all of your subject matter experts, each of your five subject matter experts are going to create a separate plan, and together they are this overarching plan. They are the comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy, and it's these five components. And if you look at the punch list, and again, I would encourage you to go back last month and go, because I went through this in more detail, but this is what's accomplished in the first 104 days of every client relationship. You get your five subject matter experts to create these five overarching plans. And then the five things that comprise the overarching strategy are the five plans, then a lifetime capital projection produced by the financial planner, and then a cash reserves plan, and that's cash reserves strategy and a target amount for, contingency fund, cash reserves fund, a debt plan if they have debt, in other words, a schedule for paying down and ultimately eliminating debt. And then fifth is an assumptions page by each of the five subject matter experts saying, when you read through my individual plan, from each of the subject matter experts, each of them are assuming certain things. So the tax person says, here's my tax plan for this client, written tax plan. And here are the assumptions that I've made within this tax plan. So there are five assumptions pages. So that's what we mean by overarching strategy. Next question. Do you have any must-have deliverables that you provide to pretty much every client? I know that each of your subject matter experts have their own list of deliverables, and the and those that you give the subject matter expert as you outline their responsibilities, but is there or do you have your top five or so, knowing that every client is unique, deliverables that you make sure every client receives? Yes. Okay. So you'll discover this as you go through this program. There are all you're receiving projects from me on a monthly basis. And if you have not received this yet, you can always request modules out of order. So if you have not received these yet, then know that these modules are coming. You know, the idea is each and every month we give you a project, you work on it, you implement it, you get it done, you actually, you know, accomplish the outcomes of each project. And then, you know, next month we give you a new one, and we give you a couple of months on each project, but every month we give you a new project. So we've split up these deliverables that you're talking about into two courses. It's called the 10 client deliverables, and it's course one and two. So we cover five of the deliverables, and then we cover the second five in the second course, the second month. So we give you 2 months. Well, let me put it this way. In two projects that we're about to send you, if you haven't already received them, we cover the answer to your question. So how do you think about this? So your question is, do you have deliverables that you give to pretty much every client? Yes, the 10 client deliverables. So let me give you a framework for this so it makes a little more sense. That's one of the things that distinguished this methodology from anything else that's out there. Most financial advisors, believe it or not, you know, if a potential client or even a client asks the average financial advisor, what exactly am I getting for what I'm compensating you for or what I'm paying you for? Most financial advisors actually do not have a very articulate answer for that. It's a long, they do have an answer. Every financial advisor will answer that question. And I've done this exercise with hundreds of financial advisors over the years. So I can say that on average, the average financial advisor actually has a coherent answer. But it's not the same answer they would give to every client. And that's the difference. That in our program, there are 10 of these things, what you're calling things that you give to pretty much every client. There are 10 client deliverables that every ideal client's going to receive, and that differentiates you. And these are not things that you necessarily outline for clients. As a matter of fact, I discourage advisors from going through or even handing the clients the 10 client deliverables. I think it's okay to mention them. I think it's even okay to have a handout that describes them. But I can tell you it's a slippery slope, because then the client's going to want you to know, well, some clients are going to say, well, I don't need all of this, or there's elements of this I don't need. Trust me, every affluent client needs all 10 of these. And by the way, where these came from is my realization back in the 90s that there is no standard for the term comprehensive financial services. I did an exhaustive study over a 2-year period. I talked to nearly every major investment firm and brokerage firm in the U.S., and I discovered, until I was satisfied, there is no generally recognized industry definition for the term comprehensive financial services. So I sat down with my five subject matter experts, and by the way, defining those five subject matter experts were part of this project, and it was to decide that if you're going to hold yourself out to the world and say that I provide comprehensive financial services, you need to be able to provide services in five major areas of personal finance. And that those being financial planning, money management, insurance, estate planning, and tax. Okay. So Those are the five. And those, and then it occurred to me that because I didn't have full expertise in each of those five areas, that I would go out and that there were tons of skilled people out there, that I would go out and acquire five experts that were already skilled in those five areas. So that's, so the beginning of these 10 client deliverables was the acknowledgement that there are five major areas of financial affairs for every affluent client. And then these 10 client deliverables became the 10 items that those five subject matter experts did for every, that this is what they actually did for clients on an annual basis. So these are the 10 things, and you'll, if you haven't already, you'll get two modules describing in great detail what these 10 things are. The only reason I bring it up is because underneath, imagine this. Imagine it, that there are 10 client deliverables that every client gets on an annual basis. So the definition of comprehensive financial services in our methodology is when an ideal client has received all 10 of these deliverables in a 12-month period, that is the definition of comprehensive financial services. You can check all, once you've checked off or ticked off all 10 deliverables for that client over a 12-month period, then you can pat yourself on the back and say, this client has actually received comprehensive financial services. It is the best industry definition of comprehensive financial services. And I would go so far as to say, you know, even, you know, here we are almost 20 years hence after I developed all this, and there still is no generally accepted industry definition of comprehensive financial services. And so this is still unique and valuable. So, but what I want to make the point is that underneath, imagine if underneath each of these 10 deliverables, there's a checklist of items that are required to be done in order to have achieved each of these 10 things. In other words, each of these deliverables has a ton of what I call deliverables checkpoints, which comprise and make up these 10 client deliverables. So these are the, what I, if you're in the toolkit, it's 142 deliverables checkpoints. But if you're in the Advisor Pack monthly program, we don't give you the deliverables checkpoints. What we give you is the 10 client deliverables, and we give you instructions on how to build a team of five subject matter experts, adding a new subject matter expert at least once every 60 days. So, you know, in less than a year, like 10 months, you've got all five subject matter experts in place. You give them these 10 client deliverables and let them, with their skills and their experience, develop your deliverables checkpoints. All that long-winded thing to say it's these 10 client deliverables that every client gets. Your subject matter experts are going to establish what they feel needs, what is the checklist under each of these 10 deliverables that needs to happen every 12 months in order to satisfy yourself that these 10 things actually did get done over the course of a 12-month period. In the toolkit, we just give them out. We just say, here are the 142 deliverables checkpoints that need to be checked off every 12 months for every client. And so so there's 142 things on the checklist for each client. But in the Advisor Pack monthly program, that number 142, I only give that number to you just so you don't give up too early. You know, it's not, it's not three for each 10. It's more than, you know, it's, it should be at least close to 142 deliverables checkpoints. So it's just from a leadership standpoint, you know, you just keep pushing your subject matter experts until you're satisfied that there are enough checklist items based on their level of skill to accomplish the 10 client deliverables. Now, that's what you're doing. But I think from a more practical standpoint, you know, the question becomes, what's the outcome? So what is it? So what do you tell clients if you don't really explain the 10 client deliverables and you darn sure don't give them all the deliverables checkpoints? You want to have a 3-hour meeting where you get into the weeds, where the client's picking you apart as to what you're doing and not doing for them, and arguing with you that they don't need certain of these services when in reality they need all of it. It's just that at certain phases of their life, some of these things are less relevant during certain parts of times during their life. But the checklist needs to be there, even if you fly past a bunch of things on the checklist because at some phase of their life, some of these things aren't as relevant. That's irrelevant. You're a professional. You don't let, as Bill Bachrach says, you don't let an amateur dictate to you. You know, amateurs don't tell professionals how to do their job. So this, what I'm showing you right here is what you do, and you don't shirk your responsibilities, and you don't make it different for any client. You create a standard. You say this needs to be done for every affluent client. I'm not arguing with anybody about it. I'm just setting this as the level of service. This is so, as much for my team as for anything else. So I don't have to keep reinventing what we do for every client. You know, we just have a checklist. We go through it for every client, and some of the things on the checklist are relevant and some of them are not. But the checklist is the checklist, and that's what you're doing. But the question on the table is, what do I then tell clients? Because you got to tell them something. Well, the result is of doing all this, the 10 client deliverables are the three, what we call in this program, the three bottom line client outcomes. And as you continue through the modules in this program, this will be detailed for you a lot better than I'm about to do it right now. But in essence, the payoff to the client for doing all of these 10 things are three bottom line client outcomes. And this is what you explain to clients, and they have to value these three things, at least one of these three things. Not every client values all three of these bottom line client outcomes, but every client has to value at least one of them enough to make your entire fee or your entire compensation that they're paying you worth it. Okay, so what are they? The three bottom line client outcomes that you convey to clients, this is what you can expect from me, is it's that you're going to always be on track to your goals. The outcome of me doing what I do for you is, you know, making sure that you're always on track to your goals. So Mr. and Mrs. Client, who currently in your life is doing that? So of all your, you know, your accountant and your lawyer and your insurance agents, who's aware of whether you're on track or off track? And if you were to drift off track, who's the one that steps up and says, hey, hey, you're off track. Here's what you need to do specifically to get on track right now. Get back on track. So I'll do that. So you've got to decide, Mr. and Mrs. Client, what's it worth to you to know that you're always on track? What's that worth to you? Secondly, being proactive on financial issues. That's in the bottom line outcome of what I do, that you're going to take every opportunity, every financial opportunity, you're going to take it, you're not going to miss it, and you're never going to have financial surprises. And for some reason, clients tend to more value the no surprises, in my experience, but they're both equals. In other words, we're going to be so far ahead in our thinking about you or in your situation. We're going to be paying so close of attention, and we're going to be thinking so far ahead about your issues, and that we're going to, if there's some opportunity for you to, you know, to make, how about maxing out on retirement accounts? I'm just giving some standard examples that take no effort to envision what I'm talking about. You know, should I max out on my 401k? Should I max out on my SEP? Or of all the ways that I could fund my child's education, what, you know, uniform gift to my, of all these options, what should I do to fund my, to start funding my child or grandchild's educate, you know, college? You're going to take advantage. I'm going to be so proactive. You're going to take advantage of every opportunity. You're not going to miss any opportunities, financial opportunities that are predictable, and there are going to be no surprises. So what's it worth to you to know that you'll never again ever have a tax surprise? You'll never have your accountant at that meeting look you in the eye and say, oh, you owe $30,000 in taxes, and that's because you sold something last year you forgot about, and then you got to scramble to write the check. Or it's just irritating that you got to pull that money out of your cash reserves that you you forgot about. So there will be no more of those surprises. So what's it worth to you, Mr. and Mrs. Client, to know that you're so proactive on all your financial issues that you'll never miss any opportunities, you'll never have any financial surprises ever again? What's that worth to you? And then finally, that you're just going to make better financial decisions overall. You're going to make smart choices about your money in all areas of finance. You're going to make smarter choices about your money in tax and money management, insurance, you know, how about financial planning? you know, if you go overseas on a trip abroad, how do you arrange for foreign currency so that you don't get screwed on the exchange rate? And it's the smartest way to do it. I mean, it's not just investments and money management. No, for the first time in your life, you've got somebody on your team that's going to coordinate all aspects of your finances, and you're going to make smarter choices about your money in all areas of finance. So, Mr. and Mrs. Client, what's it worth to you to know that you're going to make better financial decisions in all areas of finance? And I'm saying these are the three bottom line client outcomes of the 10 client deliverables. So your question is, what are the things that you do for every client? Absolutely do for every client. That's the 10 client deliverables. What do you explain to clients about the 10 client deliverables? You focus on the three bottom line client outcomes. And they've got to find at least one of these to be appealing enough to be worth what you're charging. And by the way, then, so just to kind of sum it up, the 10 client deliverables and the deliverables checkpoints, which are each of the 10 deliverables, the checklists that are underlying each of the 10 deliverables, that's your trusted advisor activities. That's what you're doing. So the results of those activities are the three bottom line client outcomes. But you know, it's so funny. I think what you're actually, and those are done for every client. That's the answer to your question. But I think what you're actually getting to is, you know, what's so amazing about this program, the Advisor Pack Monthly program, as compared to anything else that's out there? Well, I will say first and foremost, there is no program out there that defines comprehensive financial services in a specific way. And we show you exactly how to set that up, and you can do it yourself like you are here in the Advisor Pack Monthly program. And if ever you are ready for the toolkit and you want to really jump in the river and take it to the next level, you know, we've got more advanced programs if you want us to give you the deliverables checkpoints and more or less coordinate your subject matter experts to make sure that there's no second guessing about what everything should be. But the point is, this is the only program that does that. But you were kind of implying there are things that you do unique for each client, and that's what actually differentiates our program more than anything. This standardization of comprehensive financial services being the 10 client deliverables, that is unique and is differentiates this program from anything else. But if you want to know what really is the most valuable, it's that finally, after you've stabilized and you're constantly and consistently delivering the 10 client deliverables, that you then are, once you've got that stabled and it becomes a habit and your team is comfortable with being able to consistently deliver those 10 things, that becomes a routine process that is effortless. Then at that point, then you really start digging in with each client. As you're delivering these 10 client deliverables, you consider custom deliverables checkpoints. And this is really the most valuable thing to clients, that you're digging into their situation. Like I mentioned, the client that travels abroad a lot and how they handle exchange rates. I mean, there's just all these things that differentiate individual clients and makes them unique. It's for you to consider for each individual client, what would be the custom deliverables checkpoints? And then do you have the skill on your team to deliver on that custom deliverables checkpoint for that client once you've identified it? And if you can consistently deliver that custom deliverables checkpoint, is it part of the standard fee? In other words, is it profitable? Can you deliver this custom deliverables checkpoint based on the base fee that that client is paying? Or do you need to consider approaching the client and saying, look, there's this thing in your life that would make your life easier, would certainly, you know, take our relationship to the next level and take another thing off your hands, but, you know, might involve an additional fee. But the point is, once you've standardized the 10 client deliverables, that gives your team the freedom to spot and recognize things that are outside the norm. And so now these are the custom deliverables checkpoints that you identify for individual ideal clients in your effort to exceed their expectations. So our program is all about exceeding client expectations. Phase one is delivering a stable level of service to every client. That's the 10 client deliverables. Phase two is then once you've got that in place and it becomes an effortless routine, then anything that a client needs that's beyond that, it's an outlier, then you spot those things. It becomes a skill of you and your team to spot those things in an effort to exceed client expectations, to say, hey, you've got this other thing in your financial life that really needs attention. And it either is or isn't a part of the base fee that you're already paying me. Doesn't really matter. If it is, you just start doing it. If it isn't, then you sit down with the client and have the conversation about, you know, what's it worth to you to have this taken care of? Because we could take this off your hands for you. And it is something unique in your situation that would make life easier, more convenient, or smarter for you to take, start doing whatever it is you spot as a custom deliverables checkpoint. So, you know, this is what's so unique about this overall approach. Something that I did not realize when I was a young financial advisor, I thought client acquisition was all about lead generation. I thought all I had to do was figure out, you know, what do I need to do to make sure that I have plenty of people that want to sit down and talk to me about doing business? That's lead generation. But I didn't realize that lead conversion was a separate project, that once you get people sitting in front of your desk, you have to have some process to filter the good clients from the not so good clients. Because if you don't have a really solid lead conversion process, then you end up like me, where I woke up one day in 1999 and I had 1,242 clients and I was miserable and I was putting in 80-hour weeks and it was just a crappy business model. It was horrible and I hated it. And I had just been accepting, I was really good at lead generation. So I, you know, you end up with 1,242 clients. But then I perfected the lead conversion process in 1999, and starting in the year 2000, I started filtering as leads came in. Well, I disengaged from 1,225 of those 1,242 clients. So I just kept 17 clients. And then from there, I started doing lead generation again. I kind of started over after 12 years in the business. I just completely started over. But now I had a lead conversion process with a solid ideal client profile and a method of filtering leads so that I only accepted the most appropriate clients, what we call ideal clients. And then with that lead conversion process being highly effective, and that was a new process for me, then I began acquiring ideal clients only, and it led to, you know, acquiring, you know, I had 17 ideal clients, but I acquired 83 additional ideal clients over the next 34 months. And, you know, I increased my business revenue from $388,000 a year. That was with 1,242 clients, up to $1.6 million. That was starting over with 17 clients and building that up to 100 clients with 87 new clients. Anyway, that was all just lead conversion. The point of telling you all this is I didn't realize lead conversion was an important part of the client acquisition process. And it never occurred to me in my 20s when I first got into this business that client service was a client acquisition project. That if you focused on exceeding client expectations, if you first of all had were able to articulate a standard level of service, in other words, the 10 client deliverables, that in and of itself distinguishes you from 99% of other financial advisors who have no baseline standard service that they can articulate. And they certainly have never thought it through as clearly as you have with the 10 client deliverables. But then on top of that, then that gives you the freedom after you perfect those 10 client deliverables. It's effortless at that point. Anything you spot in a client's life that at that point is beyond the 10 client deliverables, you go, hey, that's a custom checkpoint for that client. And you either decide if you can, if you have the talent on your team to deliver on that, or if you have to go out and get new people, and you get to decide if you can profitably deliver that custom deliverables checkpoint under the current fee arrangement or whether you need to approach the client for additional fees. But the point is, by then approaching clients consistently and focusing on exceeding their expectations, especially by proposing custom deliverables checkpoints, that what the ultimate result of that would be is that by consistently focusing on exceeding client expectations, that your clients would reward you by sharing you and introducing you to everybody in their life, and that the measure of good client service or client satisfaction is client referrals, and that under our methodology, your client referral rate will explode at some point, and that client service now for the first time is the most significant component in client acquisition. So yes, there's lead generation. For sure, you have to have lead conversion. But what if after you acquired a client, every client provided you with substantial numbers of client referrals every year? That is the way that's what distinguishes this program. Okay, on to the final question for the day. What's the secret of the Advisor Pack method? Okay, just to wrap up, what makes this different or better than any other method, the Advisor Pack method? It's much of what we've been talking about today. What you need to realize is that what drove me to create the Advisor Pack method was, back in the beginning, when I was working for a Wall Street-based firm, I literally hated all the traditional client acquisition methods that I was being taught. I disliked sales tactics. I did not like scripts, and I did not like closing techniques, and I refused to do them. And so the question is then, what do you do? And I also disliked the fast qualifying methods that I was being taught by my firm. In other words, you know, view everyone that you meet as a potential client, evaluate their potential as a client on the spot. So, you know, if you're at a cocktail party or a charitable banquet, or you're just meeting someone at the Chamber of Commerce, or you're on a committee with someone, you know, view everybody as a potential client. The minute you start the conversation, immediately start evaluating their potential as a client right then and there. And on the spot, recommend an appointment or a follow-up for business all during the initial conversation with the person. I hated all that. I refused to do it. So that drove me to create the Advisor Pack method. And I had a theory that by allowing relationships, instead of viewing everybody as a potential client and evaluating them and screening them on the spot, qualifying them, and then trying to push for an appointment immediately before you even knew them very well, I had this theory that by just allowing relationships to unfold naturally, that I would acquire clients more quickly. Well, guess what? I was right. I broke records at my nationwide broker-dealer firm. I quickly became the number one advisor and was for years. And even in Bill Bachrach's program, when I met him and started using Bill Bachrach's financial roadmap, to this day, no advisor in his program has ever acquired clients as quickly as I did. 87 ideal clients over 34 months. That's something like 2.44 ideal clients every month, you know, month after month, year after year for years, years and years. So it's just, my theory was right. And I suspected that nearly every client actually knew more people than I could possibly ever serve. I never thought about that before, but I thought, you know, they're not you know, I've got this client, they're not referring me to anyone. They probably don't know many people, or they don't like to talk to people about money. But I didn't, it occurred to me at some point that I bet if they were being honest, and if we were all being honest with each other, that almost, not every client, but almost every client knows more people than, like if they were to introduce me to everyone that they know and love and care about, I probably couldn't serve that many clients, you know? And all I was looking for was 100 clients. So I wasn't looking for 10,000 clients. So I had this theory. I had a theory that every client knows more people than I could probably serve. And you know what? I was right on that one too. So these are the two things that I was right about that really formed the basis for a program, this program that is just so different. So that simple concept differentiates the Advisor Pact method. It's a focus, and it is that the focus on consistently exceeding ideal clients' expectations is going to substantially accelerate client acquisition. That just had never occurred to me or anybody, because even to this day, you do not find any program that knows anything about unsolicited client referrals. Like, how do you drive a client to mention you to everyone in their life without you even asking them to do it? So this is the only program that knows anything about that or even tries to do that, and is successful with advisors consistently being able to do ramp that up and get that done. So and there were some things I recognized about our industry. Most financial advisors say they're client-centered, but they just give lip service to that. They're not really willing to make the effort to be client-centered. And with this method, this idea of exceeding clients' expectations consistently, you know, this method, this advisor packed method, requires a lot of work. It requires an above average work ethic. So if you're listening to this, if you're on this session and you are thinking, I'm not sure if I'm willing to work that hard. Well, most financial advisors are not willing to work this hard to find out what clients' expectations are and then to work to exceed those expectations. You know, that would put you in the majority of the industry. For this program, you have to have an above average work ethic. You have to be willing to work to do this. Most financial advisors in our industry are actually indistinguishable from each other. I mean, if you ask clients, what's the difference between that advisor and that advisor? They can't distinguish one financial advisor from another one. In most cases, this program, the Advisor Pack the Advisor Pack method, establishes financial advisors as being much higher caliber. And when I say that, I mean your expertise, your skills, your capability. And why is that? It's because you acknowledge there's five areas to the client's financial life: financial planning, money management, insurance, tax, estate planning. And you've got experts on your team who are skilled in each of those five narrow fields of finance. So you immediately, once you build your team, establish you're distinguishable from other advisors, primarily because you're a much higher caliber advisor. You have higher skills, higher capabilities than most other advisors and most other firms. And then finally, most financial advisors in our industries, they don't have a team, but if they do have a team, or they say they have a team, and usually it's just some kind of loose referral relationship, but even if they say they have a team, most financial advisors who have a team don't have a team goal. And that is really what distinguishes this program from others. You will have a team that'll give you a higher caliber of capability, and you're going to have a team goal. And what is the team goal? It's that the Advisor Pack method requires financial advisors to continually hold each team member accountable to exceeding ideal clients' expectations. And so that's the team goal. The team goal is to exceed clients' expectations, and you're going to hold the team accountable to that. And that's what makes this program so vastly different from anything else that's out there. It keeps the entire team relentlessly focused on exceeding client expectations. It utilizes the referral rate. It recognizes the fact that client referrals are the best and most direct measure of client satisfaction. That is just unheard of in our industry. Referral rates are typically thought of as just, you know, a communication skill that advisors are trained to have in begging or asking clients to provide or introduce, you know, others to you. What we recognize that's different is that that clients who refer are obviously happy, that they wouldn't be risking introducing you to people that they care about, especially unsolicited, unless they were thrilled with what you're doing for them. In other words, people only share the good news about you as an advisor with their friends or family if they're really thrilled with what you're doing. So we focus on the client referral rate, and as a result of focusing on the client referral rate as a means of measuring client satisfaction, just the mere focusing on that rate, you'll see the rate increase. It's just a paying attention to that measurement and being focused on it will drive that number up. And so you'll see increased referrals in this program, which you won't in other programs because they tend to not even realize that client referrals is a measure of client satisfaction. And client service becomes the primary driver of client acquisition. So unlike other financial services methodologies in this program, you know, basically the fact that you're serving clients at a high level, that becomes your client acquisition program. And that's just not recognized in the industry. And we've proven it with not only my story, but with all the advisors we've worked with over the years since 2002. So, and it's unlikely that the client can easily find another advisor like this. So the side benefit of the advisor pack methodology is that once you get this infrastructure in place, once you have a team of five subject matter experts, it's very unlikely that a client can find another advisor who's able to serve at that level. And if you make it your goal, I would say in most cases, you will make yourself the only game in town. So if that's your goal to be the only game in town, then this is the methodology focusing on client service that will be the client acquisition methodology that also makes you the unique advisor that if a client is looking and seeking for comprehensive financial services, it's not like they can find it in every other advisor in town. You're the only advisor that can offer at this level. So that's it. That's it for this month's session. We went a little bit over, but we don't technically have an end time for these sessions. So we wish you all the best in implementing. And as always, during the month, as you get stuck or you need direction, just click the Contact Us link on the Advisor Pack Monthly page. Just ask your question and we'll get back with you as soon as we can. And as always, until next month, we wish you the best in implementing.